VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on the VCY America Network. Jim Schneider with you today as we take a look and focus in on some of the turmoil taking place around the world today. And no doubt you find yourself gaining new information and helpful information through programs like Crosstalk to keep you informed and give you a perspective that you'll not catch on your evening newscast here tonight. We're going to focus in on the Middle East and in the dark shadow of last-ditch attempts by the United States, European Union, and others to negotiate a peaceful solution to the Iranian nuclear standoff. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Palestinian Authority Prime Minister this week holding their first face-to-face meeting in 2 years amid Palestinian threats to bring their statehood back to the United Nations. The surprising return to the table raises numerous questions, chief among them, why now? Why return to peace talks when they have failed so many times before? Is there new information that we don't know about? Here to discuss the matter with us today is the former Shiloh mayor and political analyst David Rubin, who lives in the heart of the West Bank, the region that's expected to be included in any possible Palestinian state. He is the founder and president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, dedicated to easing the trauma of children who have been the victims of terrorist attacks. He was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, but now resides in Israel with his wife and children on a hilltop that overlooks the site of ancient Shiloh, where the tabernacle stood in the time of Joshua, Hannah, and Samuel the prophet. He is observing firsthand the many developments that are taking place in Israel. He is the author of The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. And David Rubin, welcome back to Crosstalk.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be back with you.
There have not been any talks over the last couple of years between the Israeli Prime Minister and Palestinian Prime Minister. Why all of a sudden? What's going on? What's taking place that now they're meeting face-to-face this week?
Well, I think that this has more to do with what's going on with Iran than it does with what's going on with the Palestinians. The Palestinian Authority and the Israeli government has not had any meetings in the past 2 years since, and actually about a year ago, things were truly at a breaking point where the Palestinian Authority was rushing to the UN, demanding that the UN give them their rights as an independent state, and Israel was threatening to completely cut off relations and have counter threats, and but what happened in the end was that it just kind of simmered down. Mm-hmm. President Obama got very involved, and the UN didn't actually pass the statehood, even though they moved several steps in that direction. But President Obama has been pushing behind the scenes to get Israel and the Palestinian Authority back together to have some negotiations. And I believe that this is just to keep the attention off what is really the main event, which is the talks that have started between the Iranian government and the Americans, the Europeans, the Russians, and the UN, etc. So that's really the main event of what's happening right now, and this is sort of something just for Prime Minister Netanyahu, who has been pushing the United States and other countries to go forward with an offensive against Iran. It kind of gives him a chance to look like the peacemaker again. And to get some of this. So it's to his advantage as well, Prime Minister Netanyahu, because he doesn't want to be looking as one who's just trying to create a war. So this makes him look like he's a peacemaker, even though nothing is really happening and nothing will happen out of these these discussions.
Now, President Obama, would you mean, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, David Rubin is in Israel as we conduct this interview. It's just after 10 o'clock at night there. President Obama made it clear that he's going to be ceasing talks of a Palestinian state until after the election. He said no more of this until after the election. But you're saying his administration now pushing behind the scenes and all as a means to just kind of divert attention from what's happening in Iran?
Yeah, President Obama, don't go by what President Obama says. If you want to know where President Obama stands on the issues, just look at what he's said and done in the past 3 years and what he said and done before he was elected president. That's where you really find out what he believes. He's in an election right now. Let's not forget. Up until now, he was facing several Republican candidates who are very pro-Israel and very vocal about how pro-Israel they are. Now it looks like we're going in the direction of him facing just one candidate who makes very public statements about Israel. So President Obama cannot be seen as what he really is, which is one who has an antipathy towards Israel and who would like to, who really considers Israel to be an annoyance at best. And this is what we've seen over the past few years. But he's not going to make any public statements revealing what his real views are about Israel this year, because it's an election year, and he doesn't want to alienate a lot of the Jewish supporters of the Democratic Party.
Well, if he is reelected, what do you envision is in store for the region there?
Disaster. The President Obama, without anything holding him back, would be a disaster, not just for Israel, and not just for the Middle East, but for the free world as a whole. It would be the election of President Obama would be a death sentence for Judeo-Christian civilization. It doesn't mean that it would be the death of Judeo-Christian civilizations, but it would be a death sentence. It would be a call to destroy Judeo-Christian civilization, because President Obama has much more sympathies with the Islamic world than he does with the Judeo-Christian world, and he's a product of the Islamic world. He's a product of the far secular left, and those two forces are the two forces that are seeking to bring down Judeo-Christian civilization, and by the way, to bring down Israel.
We're speaking today with David Rubin, the former mayor of Shiloh. He is a political analyst. He is the author of The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. You've mentioned that the coming back to the table here to talk seems to be a diversion then from the standoff that's occurring with Iran right now on nuclear capabilities. If you would, David, share with us, you're there, you're in the region. We don't have to sift and sort through all the reporters and filters that come through the media. What is exactly going on as it relates to this Iranian nuclear standoff?
Well, there are talks that have, let me just say this first. President Obama, in his very first meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu during the president's term, they had a big argument about Israeli settlements in Judea and Samaria, otherwise known as the West Bank. They had a big argument about Iran. The president saying that Iran needs to be spoken to. We need to have talks with them and show them that we're not their enemy. Whereas Netanyahu has been saying all along and quite consistently that the Iranians are planning to build a nuclear bomb and that's what they're working hard at. So quite the opposite in perspective from the Israeli perspective and the Obama perspective. And his views have not changed, because despite the sanctions, which, by the way, have done damage to the Iranian economy, but they haven't stopped the nuclear program, Despite all that, they are back to sitting and having chats with the Iranians. And basically, what happened? They had a little talk. They spoke for a couple hours, and then everyone put a positive spin on the meeting, and they scheduled their next meeting for 5 weeks from today. So what happens during those 5 weeks? The Iranians go full force, continuing to develop their nuclear bombs. So it will not accomplish a thing. The talks are going nowhere. And all that they do is give the Iranians a period of time whereby they can continue to work hard on their nuclear program.
David, there have been rumors that have been floating around for some time now that because it looked like Israel's attack upon Iran was imminent. But yet rumors have been circulating that the Obama administration has offered to the nation of Israel bunker busters in exchange for a commitment from Netanyahu to postpone any attack until the year 2013. Is that truth or is that fiction?
Oh, it's not just a rumor. This is something that came out from a leak from an Israeli diplomat. It was published in the Maariv newspaper, which is the best-selling newspaper in Israel, and a very respected newspaper for that matter. And it was a report, yes, that President Obama offered Prime Minister Netanyahu to sell Israel the advanced bunker busters that Israel needs to penetrate that Iranian nuclear program, which is buried deep underground in Iran, covered by heavy concrete bunkers. But there was a condition attached. The condition was that Israel has to promise not to attack Iran during 2012. Well, I don't know if you noticed, 2012 just began about 3 months ago. So what we're talking about is giving the Iranians a full 9 to 10 months to continue going full force with their nuclear program, possibly crossing the nuclear threshold, at which point any attack on Iran could set off a nuclear war. This is something that Israel doesn't want. I would think this is something that the United States doesn't want. So tying Israel's hands behind its back while at the same time giving them some weapons that they can put on a shelf in some museum is not going to solve the problem.
What is the sentiment from Israelis pertaining to this exchange?
Pertaining to the offer?
Yes.
Well, look, not every Israeli knows what's going on behind the scenes. Not every Israeli reads about it or wants to know about it. There actually are some Israelis, even though we tend to be very conscious of the news, there are some Israelis who like to put their heads in the sand, and, you know, we have a lot of it in the Middle East, and pretend that nothing is going on. But the reality is that we are in a very, very dangerous situation. And most Israelis want Israel to retain that option of attacking when we need to attack.
We're going to take a quick break here. We're speaking with David Rubin live from Israel. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and author with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, has life been created in the laboratory?
No, it hasn't, Chris, nor have scientists come close. Now, they have been able to build non-living viruses from parts of other viruses. They can splice out a bit of DNA here and some there and put it all together and make something, but this is far different from creating things from scratch. They took the parts which already existed, including the DNA code, which they didn't write and can't read, and reassembled it and allowed it to do what DNA does. I don't mean to belittle the accomplishment. It was quite a feat, but it's far different from making the DNA in the first place. God, the all-powerful creator, he did that back in Genesis.
Thanks, Dr. Morris. For more information on the foundational principles set forth in Genesis, simply visit us on the web at www.icr.org. That's www.icr.org. This is Chris O'Brien. God bless.
The question of the day, ladies and gentlemen, are these indeed new peace talks, or is it the calm before the storm? We're talking today with the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, David Rubin, who's right there in the heart of the West Bank. He overlooks the place where the tabernacle stood during the time of Joshua and Hannah and Samuel the prophet. He is the author of The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. David, as we look at these issues that are before us today and we hear about these, I mean, many people shocked that there are all of a sudden these new peace talks between the prime ministers of Israel and Palestine, or the Palestinian prime minister. Isn't Hamas, Palestinian Hamas, and the Islamic Jihad terrorists, aren't they firing rockets at Israeli cities?
No, they sure are.
So what's there to talk about when rockets continue to be launched upon Israel?
Well, that's what I always say, Jim. It just doesn't make sense. Somebody is hitting you, and standing on top of you, you have this bully, and it's just punching you and punching you and punching you. You don't say, hey, let's have a chat. You got to fight back. And this is something that we haven't been doing for some time now, and we've almost lost our offensive deterrence because of this. They understand it, and because of that, they continue firing the rockets, and then they think they can dictate the terms. What has happened recently is that there is this this meeting being set up between the Palestinian Authority's prime minister and the Israeli prime minister. And they're supposed to be meeting, actually, tomorrow. And as a result of this discussion, they're supposed to come up with something. Who knows what? The Palestinian Authority chairman, Mahmoud Abbas, has given its prime minister, Fayyad, a letter for Prime Minister Netanyahu, and in this letter he threatens to go back to the UN if Israel doesn't give in to his dictates, his diktats, I should say, and this is what's going on. He says that the PA, Palestinian Authority, is going to have to abandon the two-state solution. And they're going to end up having to choose the option of the one-state option, as if they're going to threaten us with a demographic takeover. Well, it may come as a surprise to them, but the Jews who live in the West Bank, properly known as Samaria and Judea, are Jews who really believe in the commandment to be fruitful and multiply, and we have a lot more kids than they do, and we have very large families, and we're very committed people out here, here in the biblical heartland of Israel, where all the historical places of the Bible are. So we're not intimidated by Abbas's threats, and I hope that our prime minister isn't intimidated by Abbas's threats.
There have been so-called diplomatic talks that have been going on between Iran and the United States, the Europeans, and others. Israel's been criticizing these quote-unquote diplomatic talks. Give us Israel's perspective on that.
Well, in short, you don't talk to terrorists. If someone's coming to kill you, kill him first, and you just do not tell a terrorist who's firing rockets at you, a terrorist who's developing nuclear bombs and saying that he's going to kill you with them, you don't sit down and have a chat, a cup of coffee with that person. You blow them to smithereens. That's the way that you deal with terrorists. That is the way that not just Israel, but the United States and the Western world used to deal with terrorists and dictators. That's how it was during World War II, when the United States and the Allies dropped bombs on Dresden and Berlin in order to put an end to the the Nazi Holocaust and the Nazi takeover of the world. This is what needs to be done nowadays. We have to reclaim that deterrent, reclaim that that sense that you win wars by fighting in the spirit of Joshua, by going in and destroying the enemy.
Do you believe that these nations are optimistic, really, that this is going to end the crisis, that these diplomatic talks are going to be successful?
Well, I think that they are frantically grabbing at straws, trying to find some sort of solution that can avoid military conflict. And I understand in the sense that that maybe it comes from good intentions. I think it also comes from economic concerns, because the Europeans are in a serious economic problem right now with all of their debt. And, of course, the United States has its horrible deficit, which many people seem not to be talking about anymore. There are serious economic problems that they're trying to avoid by avoiding a conflict. But the fact is that they're just pushing off the inevitable and making the inevitable conflict far worse. And as I said before, I would much rather have a conventional conflict with Iran than have a nuclear conflict with Iran.
Mm. Now, you mentioned this meeting is taking place tomorrow between the prime ministers?
Yes, they're scheduled to meet tomorrow. And, of course, you have to understand that Prime Minister Netanyahu is the political leader of Israel. This fellow, Fayyad, is not the political leader of the Palestinian Authority. The political leader of the Palestinian Authority is Mahmoud Abbas.
So why is he not meeting then?
Because he doesn't want to. He would rather just dictate terms.
Yeah.
And Netanyahu, once again, trying to look like Mr. Nice Guy, and the peacemaker, and being upset because the left-wing media criticizes him as being a warmonger. So of course he overreacts to it, and he tries to appear as the peacemaker by sitting and talking over and over again with these Palestinian terrorists who want nothing but peace.
Well, David, there is not only this this front that Israel is having to concern itself with as far as Iran right now and its nuclear capabilities, but there is another neighbor, namely that of Egypt, which has had good relationships with Israel, but now we are seeing total upheaval take place in Egypt with the race for the presidency there. The State Department of the United States is welcoming the Muslim Brotherhood's bid for the Egyptian presidency. Let's take a look at this front confronting Israel at this time. What are your concerns for Israel as to what's going on in Egypt?
Well, the Egyptians, about a year ago, ceased being potential friends of Israel when they chose the path of the Muslim Brotherhood. The so-called pro-democracy movement or the Arab Spring has been proven to be nothing like that. What we're really talking about is an Islamic tsunami. It's just this domino effect that is overtaking the Middle East, country after country after country. Islamic extremism is taking over. They had their parliamentary elections in Egypt, in which they elected the Muslim Brotherhood, which is basically the Hamas terrorist organization, is a branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, you have to understand. Muslim Brotherhood is the ideological home of the Sunni Muslim terrorists, of the proponents of jihad, holy war against all non-believers. Non-believers, of course, in their eyes, meaning all Christians, all Jews, all non-Muslims. So that is the direction that Egypt is going in. The Muslim Brotherhood won a full 50% of the parliamentary elections. Another 20-plus percent was won by the Salafists, who are even more extreme than the Muslim Brotherhood, if I could say such a thing. And the presidency in Egypt is going to be won by a candidate who is if not a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, at least will work closely in achieving the aims of the Muslim Brotherhood.
David Rubin with us today. By the way, for those who would like to obtain your book, The Islamic Tsunami, subtitled Israel and America in the Age of Obama, how can they obtain it?
Well, they could just go to Amazon.com, Amazon.com, and just type in Islamic Tsunami, and you'd have a copy in no time. There's also a phone number that people can call if they don't want to go through the Internet.
Okay.
And that is 1-800-431-1579. Okay, for a copy of the Islamic Tsunami, 1-800-431-1579.
David, this week, Thursday, April 19th, is Holocaust Remembrance Day, first established by the Israeli parliament. What is it important for the world to know about this infamous period in history as it's being remembered this week?
Well, we've spoken a little bit about what the Holocaust actually was. I mean, we're talking about an event in which there was a man named Adolf Hitler and his Nazi party who exploited freedom that was provided in Germany at that time, freedom and democracy, and exploited those freedoms to gain control and to attempt, number one, to destroy the Jewish people, and number two, to take over the free world. Those two goals weren't accomplished because the Allies at that time stood up against Hitler and the Nazi Party, stood up against them and fought against them and fought the war to win, fought World War II to win the war. And that's why the war was won. And then at the end of the war, the terms were dictated to the losers. And that is how wars were always won in the past, but since then it hasn't been like that. So yes, you talk about Holocaust Remembrance Day. There are so many lessons to be learned, not just about the Jewish people's right to exist as a free, independent nation, and the things that Israel has to teach the world. And to contribute towards the world, but also how we fight evil, in our times, and we're faced with similar evils, where we have these forces of Islamic extremism seeking to take over the free world, and at the same time the forces of communism. They call themselves socialism, but what we're really talking about is secular communism. Moral relativism is a more benign term. But those forces together, the far left, the Occupy Wall Street movement, is just one manifestation of that, along with the Islamic ideologues who are seeking to destroy Judeo-Christian civilization. And how do we stand up against that? And are we prepared? Do we have a moral compass that will enable us to stand up against that in our times?
Folks, let's open the phone lines here today. We're talking to David Rubin live from Israel. Our number, 800-733-9829. Get on board, 1-800-733-9829. You can have your questions addressed uncensored by the national media. We'll be right back.
From the frontiers of scientific discovery, researchers are now taking design elements from the natural world and creating extraordinary breakthroughs that benefit our health, our quality of life, our ability to communicate, and even help us work more efficiently. Many of these are documented in the book, Discovery of Design. In this book, you'll learn how things like batteries, human organ repair, micro lenses, and even credit card security all have links to natural designs. You'll learn how innovations like solar panels in space use technology from beech tree leaves, how the study of the leg bone led to the building of the Eiffel Tower, how the study of the timber beetle helped to improve the use of chainsaws. Over 75 such illustrations are given. It's a fantastic journey into the intersection of science and God's blueprints for life. Discovery of Design is available for a donation of $16 or more to VCY America by calling 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk here on VCY America. David Rubin is with us. He is the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. He is a political analyst. He lives right in the heart of the West Bank. You have opportunity to talk to him today on Crosstalk. Our number is 1-800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. If you have questions about the Middle East, certainly now is the time to talk to somebody who is there observing what's going on. The peace talks that are getting underway tomorrow, are they indeed peace talks? Or the question is this the calm before the storm? Again, our number 800-733-9829, and we welcome you to get on board with your questions. David, do you really believe this might be a calm before the storm?
Yes. Look, everyone in Israel knows that a storm is coming. The only question is, what kind of storm will it be? Will it involve the terrorist organizations such as the Hezbollah and the Hamas and Islamic Jihad, and will it involve Iran? Will it involve the Hezbollah in Lebanon? These are all questions. What form the storm is going to take? Will it involve the Fatah, the Palestinian Authority, fighting against Israel? But the storm is coming. There's no question about that.
Our number 800-733-9829 to Daniel from the state of Wisconsin. You're on the air, Daniel.
Hello. Does Israel believe that the inevitable Israeli air attack against Iran will draw into the conflict the United States military, and will Obama order U.S. forces to aid Israel in its attack against Iran?
I don't think that's necessary. I really don't. Israel all along has been pretty consistent in calling for the United States, for the American administration to give a green light for Israel to do whatever it needs to do to protect itself and to and against the Iranian nuclear program. That nobody is asking the United States to send troops overseas again to another country, in this case Iran. But there are many things that the United States can do to support Israel passively, both politically and militarily. But it would not involve any American troops being sent to Iran.
Let's go to Jackson, Tennessee. And Carol, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Yes, I heard a rumor that someone in the United States government leaked information about Israel's plans for refueling stations for an air attack on Iran. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard that Israel had certain countries that would allow the planes to refuel, and now those countries are closed.
Mr. Rubin?
Well, it's no secret that Israel has been preparing for a possible attack for a long time, and one of the things that you need to do, especially when you're surrounded by enemy countries and hostile countries that are looking to destroy you, you seek places where you can do refueling, where you can do all the things that need to be done if you're going to launch an attack. Unfortunately, that report that the caller just cited, it possibly has a lot of truth to it, and I am not at all surprised, because there are leaks coming out of the American administration left and right, trying to sabotage any potential Israeli attack on Iran. It's not just the report that we discussed earlier about the deal that President Obama proposed to Israel that would force Israel to hold off on a possible attack for another year until well after the American elections. But it's also these small leaks that have been coming out from different sources in the Obama administration that are trying to make it almost impossible for Israel to attack Iran if it needs to.
I have another question. You have a charity there in Israel, and how could someone here in the United States donate to that charity if they don't have the Internet?
Oh, very easily. First of all, so the callers who don't know about our charity will know, there was a terrorist attack 10 years ago when my three-year-old son and I were both wounded. I was shot in the leg. My son was shot in the head. We miraculously survived that attack with the bullet missing my son's brainstem by 1 millimeter. As a result of the trauma that he went through and the trauma that I saw so many children go through, I started the Shiloh, or as we call it in Israel, the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund. And the purpose is to ease the trauma of the terror victims through various therapeutic and educational children's projects. Yes, of course, anyone who goes on the Internet can just go to ShilohIsraelChildren.org, and you can make a donation through the website. You just go to donate, and you have a choice of either monthly recurring donations or a one-time donation. It's very simple, and it's done securely via PayPal. But for those who don't go into the Internet, there's an address that someone can just send a check to, and, of course, that donation will be acknowledged. And it's Shiloh Israel Children, Shiloh Israel Children's Fund.
Okay.
P.O. Box 212.
212.
Suffern, yes, P.O. Box 212.
Yeah.
Suffern, New York. That's S-U-F-F-E-R-N. Suffern, New York, 10901.
Okay, Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, Post Office Box 212, Suffern, New York, 10901.
That's it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol, for your call here today.
God bless and shalom.
Thank you.
Let's go to Blue River. Bill, you're on the air.
Yes, sir, I appreciate your guest, and your show is always enjoyable to listen to. But I think I'm going to side with Iran on this whole issue, because if I had a neighbor with 400 nukes pointing at me and I had none, wouldn't you think a little differently? Don't you think sometimes that when it comes to Israel and the United States, that the tail is wagging the dog, that Israel is telling the United States, go to war, go to war? I'm voting for Ron Paul because I'm sick of this Middle East stuff.
Well, okay. David, let's get your comment on this caller.
Well, that's a very interesting comment there. I think that, first of all, Israel doesn't have any nuclear weapons pointed at anybody. So, frankly, I don't know what he's talking about. But it's kind of interesting about Ron Paul. You know, Ron Paul has a history of not being supportive of Israel. And, you know, for that reason, a lot of people who are either, you know, just anti-Semites or were just hate Israel for whatever gut reason, you know, have jumped on the Ron Paul bandwagon. But what's interesting is that just a few days ago, Ron Paul came out and said that he would support moving the U.S. embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, which is, of course, where it's supposed to be, because that's Israel's historical capital for 3,000 years. So I find that kind of interesting. You know, maybe Ron Paul is reconsidering some of his views. I think that this caller may need to start reading the history of the area of the Middle East a little bit, and the history of Israel, so he'll really understand the facts.
Bill, do you have a follow-up?
No, I appreciate the comment, and I just hope that we don't go to war again. We're bankrupt over here. We've got bases spread worldwide, and our borders are unprotected here.
Mm-hmm.
And well, Bill, I'll just tell you that I also hope that you don't go to war. I don't see any reason, as I said earlier, I don't see any reason why one American soldier needs to be sent to Iran.
Appreciate your call here, Bill. Let's go next to, holding the longest has been John. Go ahead, John, you're on the air.
Yes, I'll ask a question real quick and then I'll hang up.
Okay.
Should Iran be attacked, will other nations join in to back Iran like Russia or China? I think they might have interests.
I don't think that the Russians or the Chinese are going to be jumping in so fast. The Chinese have a very quickly developing economy. I don't think they want to imperil that by getting involved in any military conflict right now. The Soviet Union has been burned before in Afghanistan. I don't think they're looking to jump in. The Russians, not the Soviet Union, at this time. I think what we really need to be looking at is the Islamic terrorist organizations such as the Hezbollah in Lebanon and whether they're going to jump in because they are, after all, Iranian proxies heavily funded by Iran. The question, I think, is if there is an Israeli strike on Iran, is it going to be quick and fast and as hard as it can possibly be? Because that is how you win a war, and that is how you create deterrence. If it looks like the Iranians are going to be the clear losers in any kind of preemptive strike, I don't think the Hezbollah is going to be so foolish as to jump in. If it looks like it's going to be a long, drawn-out process with ceasefires and all kinds of ridiculous compromises with this evil empire in Iran, then I think that the Hezbollah will be very happy to jump in because they'll think that they have a possibility of actually winning.
Appreciate your call. David, let me ask you this. If you were asked the question to list off the nations that you consider to be a true friend of Israel, what nations would be included in that list?
Oh, wow. That is a tough question, Jim. I think I look at it like this. There is no greater friend of Israel's than the United States of America. I'm not speaking about the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking about the grassroots of America. I know the United States as one who was born and grew up in the United States, and I know my American history as well as, of course, my Israeli history. And the United States is a country that was built on biblical foundations, and biblical foundations that were clearly connected to the Bible of Israel. In fact, in colonial times, the chancellor of Harvard University was fluent in the Hebrew language, the language of the Bible and the language of Israel. And it wasn't an accident because he knew that if he wanted to understand Bible, he needed to understand Israel.
Hmm.
And that's just one of many, many examples of the close ties to Israel. And in my book, The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama, the whole first chapter is dedicated to that connection.
David Rubin is our guest today. He's talking to us live from Israel. We're going to be back in just 1 minute with more of your phone calls here on Crosstalk. Stay with us.
For the Worldview Weekend Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewweekend.com. Continuing our commentaries on 20 characteristics of false teachers embraced by the false church. Number 4 is false teachers willingly embrace unbiblical philosophies. 2 Timothy 4:4 says, and they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. That word fables is translated also philosophies. Isn't that interesting? Because Colossians 2:8 says, beware lest anyone cheat you through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the tradition of men, according to the basic principles of the world, and not according to Christ. So false teachers turn their ear away from truth and follow unbiblical philosophies. The very same unbiblical philosophies were warned about in Colossians 2:8, not to be cheated by. So false teachers knowingly embrace false teaching and unbiblical philosophies. Our website, worldviewweekend.com.
You're listening to Crosstalk here on VCY America, I'm looking at the name Israel and European Union, and certainly there's been a lot going on in regard to this Iranian nuclear standoff, and the Prime Minister of Israel and the Palestinian Authority Prime Minister are set to meet tomorrow, having face-to-face meetings while Israel continues to be bombed by her enemies. And we're talking today to Israel with David Rubin. And let's go back to the lines, which are packed. Thank you for your patience. Holding very long has been Joe from the state of Wisconsin. Joe, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'll make my comments and wait for yours, okay?
Okay.
It is my belief, having watched Obama for the last 3.5 years or whatever, the man is definitely Islamic. He's Muslim. He wants Israel to fail, and he wants us, U.S., to fail, which we have an economic crisis, which will guarantee that. And that will make it much easier for the Islamic nations to take over the world, which, of course, is their goal. I will wait for your comment. Thank you.
Thank you for your call. David, your response.
I always say that whether Obama is actually a Muslim or whether he was born in the United States, you know, those two questions I prefer to leave for commentators like Donald Trump to discuss. Hmm. But I obviously there's a lot of truth to what the caller said. I believe that Obama, because of his clear sympathies for the Islamic world, his clear sympathies for the far-left secular anarchists, I believe that the man is a danger to Judeo-Christian civilization and to Israel and to the United States. And I think that if the man is reelected, then the whole free world is in deep, deep trouble.
We're going next to the nation of England, where we have Robert calling in. Robert, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's good evening over here.
Okay.
Just very quickly, one very encouraging news item I found in Israel My Glory magazine is that the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is planning to host Bible study at his official residence. Mm. And I thought that was a very encouraging sign. And I'll ring off and listen to comments over the internet. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Don't know if you have any information on that, David, or not.
Oh, sure. Well, that's nothing new. That's been going on for a number of months now.
Okay.
I think it's a good thing, and I think it's very symbolic. I hope that it's not just a political move to keep the religious right on his side, and I hope that he'll start to look to the Bible for a little bit more guidance when it comes to making decisions about settling the land of Israel.
Let's to the state of Alabama. Tommy, you're on the air.
Hey guys, how y'all doing today?
Fine, thank you.
I was having a question for your guest. If he was familiar with the news coming out of Russia this week, they're massing troops on the border to prevent Zionist Western aggression attack against Iran.
I'm sorry, you had troops at the border of Iran?
Yeah, at Russia. That's the news coming out of Russia this week. They're going to try to stop a Western attack against Iran, which could potentially kick off a nuclear World War III.
Are
you familiar with that?
Well, I'm not familiar with any reports about Russian troops on the move. It would come as a big surprise to me if the Russians would jump into any possible conflict or preemptive strike
at this point.
I just don't see it happening. It doesn't seem to be in their interest to get involved on a direct military level.
You're saying that at this point, David?
Yes, I just don't. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it's enough of an interest for them that they are going to get involved in the near future in any sort of possible military conflict in Iran.
Okay.
But perhaps behind the scenes, but certainly not in an overt way.
Thank you, Tommy. And finally, in West Dallas, we have Chris calling. You're on the air, Chris.
My comment is concerning a follow-up to the other gentleman that spoke. It's not as much knowledge, understanding as I have through men like Usama Dakdok and others who have already spoken the truth that Barry Santoro, now Barack Hussein Obama, is a Sunni Muslim, and is Sunni Muslims are is the Muslim Brotherhood. So this is a proclamation to all pastors that need to inform the flock, true believers, that just to get behind this man, we need to expose Barack Obama for who he really is. He hates Israel. He must hate Israel, because he's a Sunni Muslim, and that needs to be exposed like none other, because the Bible says my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Appreciate your call here.
By the way, Shiite Muslims hate Israel just as much. I don't think it's a question of Sunni or Shiite, but the point is that anyone who has that deep affinity for the Islamic world and says that the call to prayer in the mosques, which is usually a call to war from the mosques, is the prettiest sound in the world, as Obama has said, cannot possibly be a friend of Israel's or a friend of Judeo-Christian civilization.
David, we have 60 seconds left. What is your warning to America about the Islamic tsunami?
Well, a tsunami is something that just takes over everything in its way. It is imperative that people wake up and understand that the threat is not just Islamic terrorism, but it is the Islamic tsunami of demography, control, taking over control of the media, of the colleges, of the school systems. This is something that is going on actively in the United States and in the West. And I suggest that people strongly wake up and get on board with Israel and get biblically connected, so that we will both, Israel and America, be able to confront this Islamic tsunami in the years ahead.
Well, David Rubin, we appreciate you being with us. You're about 8 hours in advance of our time here, but thanks for carving out some time out of your schedule to share your heartbeat about these so-called peace talks going on, and certainly we encourage our listeners to be praying for the peace of Jerusalem. David Rubin, our guest, thank you for joining us. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us here on Crosstalk on VCY America. For more information about his book, you can contact 1-800-431-1579 and that website, ShilohIsraelChildren.org. Thanks for joining us on Crosstalk.
Been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.